married to the second person in the state, who was considered as the presumptive heir of the empire. The tender respect of Augustus for a free constitution which he had destroyed can only be explained by an attentive consideration of the character of that subtle tyrant. A cool head, an unfeeling heart, and a cowardly disposition prompted him, at the age of 19, to assume the mask of hypocrisy, which he never afterwards laid aside. With the same hand, and probably with the same temper, he signed the proscription of Cicero and the pardon of Cinna. His virtues, and even his vices, were artificial, and according to the various dictates of his interest, he was at first the enemy, and at last the father of the Roman world. When he framed the artful system of the imperial authority, his moderation was inspired by his fears. He wished to deceive the people by an image of civil liberty, and the armies by an image of civil government. The emperor was elected by the authority of the Senate and the consent of the soldiers.
Gibbon dwells only briefly on the successors to Augustus. Between the reign of the first emperor and that of Antoninus Pius in AD 138, Rome suffered at the hands of a variety of emperors, whom Gibbon calls monsters.
It is almost superfluous to enumerate the unworthy successors of Augustus. Their unparalleled vices and the splendid theatre on which they were acted have saved them from oblivion. The dark, unrelenting Tiberius, the furious Caligula, the feeble Claudius, the profligate and cruel Nero, the beastly Vitellius, and the timid, inhuman Domitian are condemned to everlasting infamy. During 80 years, excepting only the short and doubtful respite of Vespasian's reign, Rome groaned beneath an unremitting tyranny which exterminated the ancient families of the Republic and was fatal to almost every virtue and every talent that arose in that unhappy period.
Of Hadrian, who ruled between AD 117 and 138, Gibbon is almost equally dismissive.
Hadrian was by turns an excellent prince, a ridiculous sophist, and a jealous tyrant. The general tenor of his conduct deserved praise for its equity and moderation. Yet in the first days of his reign, he put to death 4 consular senators, his personal enemies, and men who had been judged worthy of empire. And the tediousness of a painful illness rendered him at last peevish and cruel. The Senate doubted whether they should pronounce him a god or a tyrant. And the honors decreed to his memory were granted to the prayers of the pious Antoninus.
But Gibbon reserves a measure of praise for the 2 Antonine emperors, Antoninus Pius, who ruled from AD 138 to AD 161, and his successor, Marcus Aurelius.
The 2 Antonines governed the Roman world 42 years with the same invariable spirit of wisdom and virtue. Although Pius had 2 sons, he preferred the welfare of Rome to the interest of his family, gave his daughter Faustina in marriage to young Marcus, obtained from the Senate the tribunician and proconsular powers, and with a noble disdain, or rather ignorance of jealousy, associated him to all the labours of government. Marcus, on the other hand, revered the character of his benefactor, loved him as a parent, obeyed him as a sovereign, and after he was no more, regulated his own administration by the example and maxims of his predecessor. Their united reigns are possibly the only period of history in which the happiness of a great people was the sole object of government.
But the rule of Marcus Aurelius was clouded by his indulgence towards his wife Faustina, who Gibbon tells us took many lovers, and his son and future emperor Commodus.